Right, well, thank you. I will be as brief as possible because I know that lunch is approaching. Again, also, can I just thank you very much for inviting me along today to this beautiful city. It's great to speak last because many of the core themes have already been addressed, and I don't need to focus on them. And what I thought I would do for this session is to focus a bit more on kind of some empirical work that I've been involved with, and thinking conceptually as well, but primarily about some empirical work I've done over the years, where I've looked at the role of businesses, the private sector, in partnerships, particularly relating to urban development. I've also though looked at slightly bigger questions of business involvement in regional policy making as well. I did lots of work in Scotland a few years ago on looking at business attitudes to the new Scottish Parliament in Scotland and the new organisations there. So what I thought I would do is think a little bit about thinking about the model here and thinking about PPP. I thought I'd concentrate on some questions surrounding kind of motivations or thinking about why it is that particular actors, particular groups actually engage in partnership building as a process. It's a very important question. And my sense, and this has already been said by others, my sense is looking at the Corbett model that it does presuppose a set of rationalities, if you like, on the part of actors. It presupposes that partnerships can and will happen. And I think there's also an element in which it presupposes that partnerships, public-private partnerships, are always an important part of urban development. And I want to think a little bit more about why it is that, say, different actors engage in the process of partnership building. What is it that they actually want and take from a partnership? What is it that they imagine partnerships to be? And what I want to say here in terms of the rise of public-private partnerships in the UK, as elsewhere, is critical, and it is a critical issue, of course. But I want to think a little bit about how we might understand that process. So what I want to do in this presentation is think about moving perhaps beyond what you might say are kind of rationality-based explanations for partnership building. I want to think a little bit about partnerships, perhaps more as networks, a word that hasn't appeared much today, but thinking about dynamic networks rather than static kind of models or understandings of partnership, and I'll come back to that. And being a geographer, of course, I want to talk a little bit about contextualization as a process, and this has already been made, I think, very well by other speakers. But thinking about the contexts within which partnerships are formed and how they differ from different contexts in different places, and how we might include that kind of spatial contextualization, perhaps in a model, in a more direct sense. At the moment it's quite implied, but I want to think about how we might include that. And think about questions perhaps of the who, why and how of partnerships. It's kind of basic questions, thinking about the model. It just seems to me that a lot of people talk about partnership rationalities in quite simple ways. We think about private sector actors as thinking about why they get involved. Well, partly for economic reasons, trade-offs, business opportunities, of course, partly for political reasons, legitimation, influencing the planning process is a very important aspect. And we think about social dimensions as well. This is one thing I want to expand on in a moment, but thinking about private sector actors, you know, as members of society, and of course the people that we deal with when we are talking to business actors are people, of course, and they have particular social perspectives on who they are, what their responsibilities are, and what business should be doing, if you like, in terms of urban planning and urban development. So I'll come back to some of these things later on. There are some interesting public sector rationalities to think through, and I want to raise these in terms of my own research. But I think one important aspect is kind of place imaginations and imagined hierarchies, competitive hierarchies. Every time I go to a European meeting and hear from local policymakers, I often, you know, if whether it's in Slovenia or in Finland or whatever, people will come up with immediately with hierarchies of where their particular place fits into some imagined hierarchy. We are 25th out of 200. These things are incredibly important to policymakers. Less important, I think, to publics, but certainly to policymakers. And that is very much a rationale for partnership. It's about, well, we include the private sector. It will help us to move up some imagined league table. And this is certainly very important in the research I've done. It's one of the rationalities. There are, of course, economic justifications. Many urban authorities struggle financially for resources, and this is obviously a way of tapping into new resources, getting private sector money, and political popularity. So these are some very basic kind of things I think that are important, but they need to be somewhere, I think, in the model. What I want to do is focus firstly on perhaps questions of motivation and imaginations, if you like. And why is it then that people get involved in partnership work? Now, we might define motivation as the reason a person has for acting in a particular way, a motive, like the rationality and reason for doing something. And I think that within some of the models that are out there in terms of partnerships, that sometimes there are assumptions about the rationalities that are used by actors, and I think quite they're simplified much too easily. What I would argue is that we have to understand the political or why people engage in these partnerships and political partnerships as very much driven by kind of socio-economic processes. My understanding is, from interviewing over the years, businesses at a variety of levels, from small businesses in urban regeneration areas, to businesses at a city level, to businesses at a regional stroke national level in a Scottish context, is that the answers that one gets from business people about why they get involved in politics, why they get involved in partnership building, is very, very diverse. And often it has very little to do with what we might call market building or economic criteria. Often it's very much about, well, I'm a Scottish person, I want Scotland to be a better place, I get involved because it's something that I want to do. I put my business logic to one side, but I get involved in partnerships because I'm Scottish and I want to see a dynamic Scottish policy or polity. Sometimes that's very much the rationality. It's not an economic logic. In fact, it can actually be the opposite of that. They say it's not good for my business to engage in partnerships, to make things work here, but I'm just a person who believes passionately in an independent Scotland or a strong Glasgow or a strong London or whatever. And these things are critically important, and I'm not quite sure how they currently fit into, or potentially into, the model that's been presented in terms of PPP and kind of justification in terms of bringing resources, I guess, into a city. But actually, the rationalities of a lot of these business people are very, very diverse and very broad, as I'll show in a minute. There are also questions about the types of knowledge and expertise one wants to bring in these sort of networks and partnerships, I can also come back to. And I think it's important for us to think about what imaginations different actors possess and why they have them. And this comes back to questions of scale. It comes back to questions of what people think their roles and responsibilities are as individual citizens or as business people or as other interests. I think this is actually a very important sociological dimension that we need to really expand on and think about. Back to the question about motivation. Why are these people involved? What kinds of imaginations or ways of thinking do they possess? And what are they trying to do by getting involved in partnership construction? Now, just thinking a little bit about processes of partnership, one thing I would argue is that we need to think about partnerships. There are many ways one could think about them, but I'd like to see them very much as a sense of kind of dynamic and fluctuating networks as a way of thinking. And my experience of looking at partnerships, particularly at the urban level, thinking about urban development, which the model is trying to focus on, is to think a little bit about partnerships as things that are very contextual, but networks and partnerships as things that are very contextual, but things that develop to solve particular problems or imagined problems. If you look at some of the work I've done in places like Reading and in London and other places in England, you find that partnerships emerge around particular imagined problems. For example, in the context of Reading, which is a very fast-growing town in the south of England, where unemployment is less than 1%, official unemployment, you have a new development in the town centre which requires 3,000 jobs, 3,000 people to fill those jobs. You found the partnership being developed incredibly quickly between local authorities, public sector, private sector, to try to deal with that particular problem. And that partnership took a particular, involved a particular kind of network. At the same time, at the same place, other types of networks are being established to deal with other imagined problems. For example, security as an issue in Reading Town Centre because of the redevelopment, and suddenly a different type of partnership involves, with different actors coalescing in different ways. And it strikes me that one needs to think a bit about partnership as a kind of form of network building, if you like, and something therefore which is quite contextual, something which is issue specific quite often, and something which it depends upon the particular imaginations of what problems need to be addressed at a particular time. There are things that are quite fluid and things that can come and go quite quickly. And I certainly like the work, some of you may have seen Keith Bassett's work on partnership building and networks in Bristol, actually. And he talks about how in certain contexts, talking about context of Bristol, marked by strong leadership and the dominance of one network or ideology, different networks can cohere into a recognisable urban regime under one overarching ideology or discourse. He talks about the ways in which networks form and emerge. And in Keith Bassett's work, he tries to think about the best ways of understanding the politics of partnership in that city. And his idea is that the network is perhaps network theory, network thinking, is the best approach to adopt. And I have some sympathy with the view of Keith Bassett in terms of doing that. Just in terms of what these processes of contextualization might be, and again, this relates to my own work over the years and reading the course of others, it strikes me that these kinds of issues need to come into the model in some form. One, of course, needs to think about market conditions, which for somebody like me as a geographer, I spent 3 years working in Glasgow and in the west of Scotland, a city where the local authorities and development agencies were desperate to get private sector investment. There were real problems in terms of the city's infrastructure and so on. The context there was very different to moving to a place like Reading in the south of England, very successful, a place almost where the local authority could pick and choose which development partner it wanted in the town because there was so much market interest in developments, in regenerating the town and redeveloping it. The market conditions were critically important, the spatially different market conditions were critically important in understanding how public-private partnerships formed and developed, and the networks that formed and developed in those two particular places in terms of my own research. But of course this is relevant for any type of research. So market conditions, which I didn't see much of in the model, are important. Political cultures and traditions of partnership working are of course critical. I think that the presentations this morning have developed some of this, and I think the whole issue about political cultures, it has to come into the model somewhere, in some form it seems to me, about, well, okay, what type of politics exists in different places? How does that influence the type of partnership one sees emerging or developing? This is an absolutely critical question, I think. It makes a huge difference. And the traditions of partnership working, or partnership failure, actually, make a lot of difference to what subsequently takes place. Back to that point this morning about the ahistorical nature of some of the models, we need to think a little bit about how tradition and culture is embedded in some of these things. Local perceptions of opportunities and development problems, how particular understandings of opportunities and problems constructed and understood in different places. We need to think all the time as well, and this comes back to some of what was being said a moment ago by Simon, think a bit about central local state relations. In other words, where does the power lie behind resource allocations, politics, partnership formation? For what reason are actors, for example, at the city level, which is what this is focused on, engaging in partnerships? Is it because of local circumstances, politics, or are partnerships being formed in many places because local agents are being told they have to form partnerships in order to acquire some central government funding, for example? That is what will shape the form and character of a partnership quite often, not a kind of internal set of dynamics that is implied, I think, by the model as it currently exists. There's a real sense of scale here about power, resources, and impetus for partnership building. There are questions about institutional presence, or what Amin and Thrift call thickness. In other words, what organisations exist in different places? Of course, it makes a huge difference in terms of the types of partnerships that exist. My work in Scotland, for example, showed that in some Scottish cities there were almost too many institutions in the city relating to economic development and regeneration, and that necessitated particular types of partnership to emerge. In other places you have different types of institutional structure, and that leads to perhaps a slightly simpler form. There are many different combinations. And it also relates, I think, back to some of what Bryn was talking about leadership here, and who is it that one should lead partnership? How does that process work? How do we understand when leadership comes into these wider processes, if at all, if it needs to, and who should take the lead? Just in terms of a few minutes, talk about some of my own research findings, and I'll come to some questions at the end. For a number of years now, I've been looking at development planning in British cities, and kind of, I guess, trying to condense some of the findings here in terms of some of the partnership aspects I've looked at. I've looked at many things, but partnership's one of them. Trying to condense some of these findings here into some of the things that I think are important. Strikes me that one of the interesting aspects of public-private partnership building in many British cities I've looked at is that they are strong public sector leadership. The kind of myth that private sector entrepreneurs and business people are dynamic, active, can come in and change. In reality, the reality is that public sector bodies almost inevitably lead partnerships, in my experience of looking at these things. And the kind of model, the kind of Thatcherite model in the British context, the Thatcher's idea of the maverick, top-level business leader, usually a man, coming in somewhere and changing everything, is actually garbage in terms of what happens. And a lot of business leaders do not do that at all, and don't really understand how a city is run, and they do not understand how cities are governed. And it's public sector organisations that tend to take the lead, particularly local authorities. I think the second set of findings is that there's often a policy focus on building a new place, and this is where partnership can be an important aspect of these things. So the policy focus is about changing a place, changing its characteristics. Partnership is an important part of that, and partnership underpins a lot of that. But we have to ask the question, who is it that shapes what the policy, what the new place should be? In the back of what Simon was saying there in his last talk about, well, who decides what it is that a partnership should work towards, what its aims and ambitions and agendas should be. There's some interesting aspects about partnership building processes, and again, my experience is back to the point I made earlier, that it tends to be quite an issue-specific set of agendas and politics that develops in many cities. So you find that particular problems or issues come to the fore, and partnerships are almost like a firefighting role, as we say in English. You put out a fire or a problem that emerges. That is the basis of a lot of partnership building. It's to deal with particular problems that emerge, rather than thinking more strategically or thinking about long-term development. It's more about dealing with day-to-day practices and realities. Importance of imagined hierarchies, as I said, is actually very important. A lot of local authorities in Britain like to be seen to be working with private actors for political reasons. And certainly a lot of so-called Labour, New Labour administrations in Britain like to be seen to be pro-business in a broader sense. And that underpins a lot of the rationality for partnerships. It's like we have to be seen to be working. What's a better way of doing that than having a document you stick down with a partnership with lots of different actors in it? I think other issues about strong local markets, I'll come back to, so I need to move on. An evolving partnership network, as I was saying about the importance of some of these things. Just on my other work, I think this is also has some relevance, although it's slightly different. But I did some work on looking at business attitudes to devolution in Scotland and the emergence of the Scottish Parliament. And I think there's some interesting things here because, as I was alluding to earlier, a lot of the business people, actually their attitudes were the opposite of what I expected to find. I expected to find them being very anti-state, anti-bureaucracy, anti-new parliament, actually very positive messages and also quite critical, but nonetheless saying they wanted to engage in a set of partnerships and network building because they wanted things to succeed in a broader sense. And okay, it's not good for business, but I get involved in partnerships for very different reasons, and I think that's actually very important. And finally, just some other work I've done, which I think raises some other issues about, well, what is the private sector anyway, which is absolutely critical. Yeah? And the private sector is a very fragmented thing in itself, of course. I've done some work in British cities looking at the relationships between local businesses, for example, and national, global, or international businesses. And of course, they have very different needs, very different priorities, very different understandings of what a business, pro-business agenda might be, or what a partnership should be. I just think it's important, thinking about this, that the issues surrounding diversity, formal and informal representation, another issue. How do you represent private sector voices? Questions about mobilisation are very important. And there's a very fractured and contextual nature of business voices, if you like, in any city or any place. So talking about a public-private partnership, well, what public, what private in particular? And how are we incorporating these people? Who is it that we are looking to? So let me just move on to the final couple of minutes, really. Thinking about the relevance of some of this stuff to the model, and I want to focus on that's three different types of questions that emerge from the rather rambling discussion. Firstly, who should be included in these partnerships? Secondly, why include the selected interests and what that process is? And thirdly, how should the processes of public-private partnership operate and be structured? So those are the three things I'm going to discuss briefly. So just firstly, in terms of who should be included, well, it's very important to identify who these key actors are. Who is it that one is thinking about when one talks about a public-private partnership? Who is it that one is, I'm saying, needs to be involved in the development of this urban area and its growth and its competitiveness agendas? Why are particular groups selected? Why are particular types of private sector actors included? Right? Are critical voices included? Do you include voices of different types of businesses? What kinds of private sector are we talking about? I think it's absolutely critical in terms of any type of partnership formation. Are we talking about local businesses, regional businesses, global businesses? Yeah, who is it that we're dealing with? Again, it's a very contextual answer to that question in terms of the different places that we have and different types of private sector are identified and mobilised to do things for different reasons. How do we measure commitment and motivation is a good question. You know, what reasons do businesses have for getting involved in partnerships, and how might we kind of measure that, not quantitatively perhaps necessarily, but how do we give some sense of the motivations behind people's agendas, why they're getting involved? And there are many things we could say about that. And what type of public sector institution should also be included in partnership building? And again, it's a very much thinking about this as a network. We might think about it as a problem-based thing. When you're dealing with security issues, you think about including the police, community groups and others. When you're thinking about development issues, you maybe try to bring in the planning departments, local authorities and so on. So how do you actually, well, which groups should be involved and which ones shouldn't be? And there's one of the questions I'll come to in a moment. So why include selected interest? Perhaps we need to establish more clearly the relevance and the value of PPPs. And we need to think about economic, political and social considerations. I think some of what Brim was saying earlier was really interesting about this. And we have to ask the basic question, is public-private partnership always the best way to proceed? You've asked us to come here as British academics. The British experience is that central government tells people that public-private partnership is always the best way to proceed. And yet in many cases, public-private partnership has been a bit of a disaster, or the misunderstood the motivations for why businesses get involved. And frankly, often misunderstand the competencies and the abilities of the private sector, quite frankly, who often are not up to this kind of job. They're not. Why should a business person have any role or say in public services or the urban development of a city? That question is never asked. It is just assumed that business people have a lot to offer the ways in which cities are governed. If you want to make a city competitive, it's argued, you must ask the people that make it competitive, the business sector. And yet in many instances, business involvement is very fractured, very poorly constructed, and lacks vision, lacks the kinds of things that are often assumed. Second question, how should processes operate? Well, I think we need to think about them, as I've tried to suggest, broader processes of motivation. Why is it people get involved, for what reasons? We need to think about perhaps opening up decision-making networks to wider communities. I think the points are made very, very well earlier. I don't need to expand on those. One of the important issues is thinking through the timing phasing of urban development and kind of wider, what I might call politics of space-time within a place. So in other words, at what point should business people be involved in setting development frameworks? Should they be involved in setting the original visions? Should they be involved in design and construction of places? Should they be involved in the longer term? At what point of the process should different interests be involved and included? And what might we be looking for in terms of inputs from different actors at different times in the development process? I think it's a whole set of things we could talk about there. and using public-private partnerships perhaps as a more positive way to fix the commitment of private sector actors in some sense. We could try to use this as a way of maybe fixing, that's the right word to use, particular commitments from groups who maybe are not so committed or have very short-term priorities or different priorities. And final slide, just to think about how should processes of partnership operate. I think it's quite interesting, this will work using the ideas of Michel Foucault, which a lot of you have come across, looking at what we call governmentalities or ways of thinking about governance. And we might think about how particular governmentalities or ways of thinking about governance are shaped by policy. So we might think about how policy, which tries to promote partnerships, how that tries to shape the thinking of the actors that are actually involved in it. How might we use policy to shape the ways in which those actors think? There's obviously a lot of philosophical discussion about that, but it's quite an interesting thing to think about. How do we change people's mindsets, if you like, and how might we use policy to lever that or to do that? I think there are questions about responsibility on the part of different actors. What responsibility should different actors have to an urban area, to a city, to a place, to a region? What are those responsibilities and how should they be sanctioned? How should they be encouraged? Or how should they be developed? I think the model needs some broader acceptance of the importance of context and legacies, as I suggested. And perhaps we need to try to establish, thinking about my research again here, more recursive relationships. I mean, one danger of public-private partnerships is that they encourage a very dependent relationship between public and private sector, that the public sector increasingly depends upon private sector inputs and resources and visions. Perhaps we need to argue that we need a more recursive or two-way relationship within that. I mean, my experience, even in a place like Reading, where I've been doing work for a few years, even in a place with strong market growth, where the local authority is in quite a strong position to stop development or to shape, in reality, most of the developments are shaped by whom? They're shaped by the private sector actors working through the partnership, because they're the ones that have been bringing the resources and they actually bottom line say what is done. So I think we need to think a little bit about how to use this kind of model to think about how public actors could perhaps use the private sector more to actually be empowered, if you like, to tackle some private sector intransigence, in my experience, or to tackle that kind of very narrow interest. But it's something that needs to be thought about at different scales. Right, so thank you. That's,